You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, August 12th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's our 1400th program of this iteration of the Majority Report, folks. And to celebrate, we're just going to make that announcement I just made. But it's Casual Friday. That means Cliff Schechter will be here. Also, to give us a film recommendation, Matthew Film Guy. On the program today is Obama and Clinton's brewing TPP war real? Turns out Donald Trump is sarcastic in his speech and his writing.
Bigly.
Nevertheless, RNC hitting the panic button. Congress apparently knew, or at least several leaders of Congress apparently knew of the DNC hack over a year ago. And how Hillary Clinton's campaign is enabling the GOP, but also promoting progressive policy. Meanwhile, Donald Trump apparently has no campaign anywhere. Are we watching an exit strategy? Harry Reid floating a plan to get Merrick Garland on the court. Can't quite figure that one out. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. I do want to say a word about this being our 1400th show. I mean, it's not actually, I think, our 1400th show. It's probably like our 1400th and 20th or something. But we, at one point, we decided to switch from indicating the date of the show to putting a number on it. And for whatever reason, I can't remember why we did this. I mean, I know I told you, Matt, not to do it, but what was the reason? Like I said, don't do the first couple of weeks because we didn't have good descriptions. I don't know. What was it?
Yeah, there was something like that. I can't remember why.
So we've done more than that on this show, but whatever. We choose 1400 because, let's be honest, that's also, what difference does that make? You know, the Majority Report was on a radio in a different format than this, and the Sam Steeder Show and Steeder on Sundays, and so God, I don't know. This could be episode 3000 for me, somewhere in that neighborhood. Nevertheless, this iteration of the show could not exist without our members' support. So I want to thank you for allowing us to do this on a daily basis. And I want to thank all of you for listening on a daily basis or a semi-daily basis. I know some of you, you'll listen like three times a week. Some two. Even a few of you, once a week. Not sure why. It's a little bit weird. I don't want to make you feel awkward, but it's a little bit weird that you would just listen one time a week, not two. We can talk once you're at two, we can talk about three. But for now, once a week, weird. Strange. Nevertheless, I want to thank our members. And if you want to join the ranks of the people who actually make this possible, there's no executives, there's no jerk who's telling us to do this or that, there's no big funders who say, like, could you please, why do you have that look on your face? Kelly, you look upset about that.
I looked skeptical. because sometimes maybe you're the jerk telling us to do this or that.
All right. Well, that's true. There's no jerk telling me what to do. And there's no big funders who say, you know, we really don't want you to touch that area, or we want you to promote that area, or and what we also don't do is pander. I'm not going to name names, although there is one who sticks out in my Twitter feed that is really, really annoying me, where it's just like the news and the analysis is dictated by what kind of YouTube clicks that entity or person gets. I'm not going to say who it is. I'm not going to. But it drives me crazy.
You're being sarcastic anyway.
I'm being sarcastic. I'm being sarcastic. I have mentioned Texture on this program before. It is an app that lets you tap into the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or your tablet or whatever your little device is. I guess that's it. There's basically the smartphones and the tablets. You can go. You can breeze through hundreds of your favorite magazines. You can go back into the archives. You can pick the articles that interest you the most and create your own magazine out of it, essentially. It's like, I mean, it's like, for me, it's sort of like I use it, you know, I use Twitter this way in some ways in way of I get pushed articles that I want. I use something like maybe Instapaper as a way of getting specific articles. But there's a bunch of magazines that you got to pay to have access to. And this brings it all together. One monthly fee. It's like Netflix in some respects. And you can, you know, binge read. It really is great. And I like a wide variety of magazines. I'll go through what I have on my favorites. But there's a ton more. I mean, there's literally hundreds of magazines. But the thing is that there's some magazines I still get in print. I get like, or I used to anyways, up until very recently. And I'm going to end up letting all of these subscriptions lapse because I can buy it in one bulk and it's going to be cheaper for me. But The Atlantic and Harper's. Harper's actually is not they don't access that, I don't believe on this. But The Atlantic, The New Yorker, Mother Jones, Handyman, Family Handyman. I know people are surprised by that. But yes, I have that. And I've been reading that religiously. People, longtime listeners know I get very excited when that comes into the office. But now I can also read The Hollywood Reporter or Successful Farming, which I have as one of my favorites. This Old House, because, again, I do a little bit of woodwork. In fact, I read Wood and Wired. Let me scroll back up. Rolling Stone magazine, Real Simple. I like to look at, like, architecture ideas, Popular Mechanics, Parents, because I need a little bit of guidance. National Geographic, Modern Farmer, Fast Company, right? Your buddies over there, Esquire, Dwell. Yeah. These are all magazines that I have access to on my phone right here. I mean, there's more I could, but these are my favorites I'm going through.
So CNET, you have Dwell?
Bird and Blooms.
Dwell's great.
Cicada. I actually haven't read anything from that one yet, but... and then what I do is I find stories, I save the stories, I read them all together. It's fantastic. And the best part for you is that Texture is offering you, my listeners, a free trial right now when you go to texture.com/majority. You'll gain immediate entry to all the top magazines, including back issues and bonus video content. Start binge reading for free right now when you go to Texture, TEXTURE.com/majority. Texture.com/majority. Check it out, folks. You're going to love it. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Cliff Schechter. But again, I guess the point is, if you want to be a member, go to jointhemajorityreport.com. We are back, Sam Cedar, on the Majority Report. That, of course, was the replacements. Alex Chilton really sort of re-energized Alex Chilton's career. And people started buying Big Star albums. And but for me, it's a little bit sad because it was sort of the replacements were starting to, you get the feeling that they were basically starting to roll things up a little bit. Nevertheless, that's not why we're here. I'll tell you why we're here, not to listen to the replacements, but to listen to this theme song.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schachter. How are you, Cliff?
Samuel, I'm doing well. How about you?
I am doing great. Not getting a lot of sleep. The kids are going through something. I don't know what the heck it is, but...
both of them are going through something.
It's, you know how it is.
Is it like back to school coming kind of thing?
It's actually getting to the point where Mila is a little bit easier to deal with than Saul. And that is, that I can't, you know, three is not my favorite age. Three is not my favorite age.
No, they call it the terrible twos. But for us, it seemed like it was more the terrible 2 years that lasted from about 1.5 to 3.5. But, you know, I suppose it differs by genetic makeup, and obviously there's all sorts of crap floating around in my family genes. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not necessarily genetic either. It could be just sort of like awareness of like, oh, God, I can't believe this is my parents.
No. In my case, it's shitty genetics.
I think my case, it could be just, it could be actually the nurture. The kid could just realize like, oh, I'm going to be stuck with you for another 15 years.
I didn't know this was part of the deal, this guy.
Right. I mean, to be fair, I've also said that to him, so I guess we're even. All right, Cliff, when we got on, there's a couple of things I want to talk about. I mean, not the least of which, there's a little TPP war going on. I don't know if you've caught that, but let's start with the polls here. There are new Marist polls that have come out in swing states. Is that right?
That is correct.
All right.
Yes. Well, let's update that. There was a point in time they were known as swing states. If these Marist polls are correct, they would no longer seem to be such. And it's interesting, you know, because, again, I'm always skeptical. I need proof in the form of multiple polls before I believe anything good, bad, or in between. But there have been, you know, there's a lot of evidence. A number of polls have come out that have shown Hillary Clinton pulling away in both Colorado and Virginia, such that the campaign itself, which has adopted a lot of Obama's data operation, which is a pretty impressive operation, has stopped advertising in those two states because they think they've put them away. And now they may start again. But so let's start with that. The newest polls that come from Marist, which is generally a good pollster, show a 14-point lead in Colorado, 56-42, a 13-point lead in Virginia, a 9-point lead, 48-39 in North Carolina, another shocker, and then 44-39 in Florida, which is also a pretty amazing margin when you consider that Obama beat Romney by less than 1 point there. And then you start factoring in the ground game or lack thereof that Trump has to make any of this up. He just said in a comment yesterday, you know, that, it seems to me that if people want to vote for Trump, I always like how he refers to himself in the third person, they'll go out and vote for Trump. So he clearly gets how campaigns work and how turnout works. And the thing is that there have been a ton of articles. There's the fact that there's only one field office open in Florida. Romney had like 10 open by now. There's an article actually on my little neck of the woods.
Yeah, Cincinnati. I saw that piece that there was an email that somebody got hold of that showed how the campaign is completely panicking. And like literally the best way, let me just broadly describe it. And then you can talk about the specifics. but it's literally like watching someone walk to the bathroom in a pitch dark apartment that has a lot of windy hallways. Like they're just going like, hey, does anybody know if the local Republicans support us? That's an amazing question to be asking, you know, 85 days out from an election. That's amazing.
Right. I mean, that's what's amazing, is that so many Republicans are opposed in a way that if it were Mitt Romney or John McCain or almost anybody else, you would just assume they're with you. But you know, look, there are even some Republicans who endorse Obama over Romney, as I remember. And so you want to go in and see who's with you. This is the kind of thing you think that maybe in April or May you would have fully ascertained.
Right.
But there, just more of an example of that this guy's a joke. And again, you learn a lot. Paul Wallman wrote a great piece the other day about how when presidential campaigns, you learned a lot about how these guys would be president. They're pluses and minuses, in some cases many minuses. With a George W. Bush or a Bill Clinton or others, you had a very good idea for how their presidency was going to run, Obama. And, you know, but you also, I think, it's an insight into their business, and it's amazing to me, even with all the being born on third base and everything that Trump started off with, that he's lasted. I mean, it's not a surprise. He's gone bankrupt numerous times. He hires entirely incompetent people just because they kiss his butt and all that kind of stuff. But it still is amazing to me that it just tells you a lot of the things we've talked about before about laws not applying to rich people, that this guy isn't in prison. Because the people he surrounds himself with are generally of a incompetent or criminal ilk. So, I mean, in any case, that's what's going on. I mean, bring it back to Cincinnati, Jeremy Fugelberg, who's a great reporter here for the Cincinnati Inquirer, reported this. You know, they've got basically a shack that a bunch of volunteers got together and decided would be the Trump headquarters here.
Folks, let me reiterate something. We are talking about what is considered the crucial swing state and perhaps the crucial county in that crucial swing state. I mean, it could arguably be the most important county in the country
I live in, if not the most important county, because to explain Ohio to people, Cuyahoga, up where Cleveland is, has always been the Democratic stronghold. And Columbus, which is in the middle of the state, Franklin County is more of a swing area, but it's been moving to the left. But Hamilton County here was always the home of you've got Procter & Gamble, the kind of more moderate business Republicans were here. You know what I mean? Back when, before the parties realigned, and now they've realigned even further. And so you had a lot of these kind of corporate Republicans here. Now, granted, a lot of them have been moving away over the years, but it's kind of like what we're seeing in these polls in Virginia and Colorado too, is that where you have better educated Republicans, the split is now not further than just along the lines that it was before, which it was along the lines often of city versus, city and inner suburbs versus outer suburbs and rural, that kind of thing. Now you're looking at that the split, especially I'm talking about among white voters, is how educated you are. Because the Republicans have won college-educated voters going back to Eisenhower's time, and they've been losing them gradually. But Trump has literally kicked that, over into the ravine. So they're now well down. And what that means is in a place like Hamilton County, so Obama won in 2008 here. For the first time a Democrat had won here since LBJ in 64 in the landslide. Sherrod Brown won here in 12, and the only county his win margin from 2006 was 6 points instead of 12. So he lost a number of counties he had won, but the only county he picked up in 12 that he lost in 6 was Hamilton. This area has been moving that way as more sort of moderate-esque Republicans have been switching and being horrified by the Democratic Party. This has sped that up a lot.
By the Republican Party. By the Republican Party.
I'm sorry, from the Republicans to the Democratic Party. Yeah. So they need to, the Republicans here, they need to sort of figure out who the hell their people are. And they've got this basically one.
They need to figure out
what's
going on, what the hell's going on, in other words.
Right, with a couple people volunteering, working, and making some phone calls. They don't have any data. They don't know who they're calling. They don't know, they don't have any kind of regular knock-on-doors kind of planning. Like, the GOTV is a joke. They've got nothing, and we're 85 days out. To give you an idea, Mitt Romney had either 3 or 4 offices, headquarters up months earlier than this.
Right, in June.
This county, and in June, and he still lost here. Obama still won here in 12. And it's trending in that direction. And so Trump's ignored it. I mean, so yeah, I mean, this is up there with like the Orlando area and a few others where if you lose your, as a Republican, you're kind of screwed.
And I also imagine, I mean, we've talked about this, that it's not like John Kasich is going to activate whatever machine he has there to go and rescue Donald Trump. Right? I mean,
yeah, when you go into the first day of the convention in Ohio and you insult the governor and say he's embarrassing himself and stuff like that and get him to the point where he refuses to support you. So that's where these insulting governors of states like Ohio really hasn't worked out very well for him.
I mean, I have to be fair, I have done similar things, not necessarily with governors, but with other people in the industries I'm in. And I can tell you right
like
now that it's
the entirety of Air America
and beyond that it doesn't. It eventually that stuff tends to catch up with you. my experience.
I can speak to that too. I've been fired from a couple political campaigns because I couldn't keep my mouth shut. It's not a positive way to go. When you're running for president, it's smart to maybe, if you're going to want to nurse all those grudges, save them for when you actually are president.
Exactly.
Saying it at that exact. So I mean, it's and again, I think that's what we're seeing in polling. I think it's really interesting. It's why Virginia, Colorado, and North Carolina, in some ways, have jumped ahead in terms of their Democratic lean, states like Iowa and Ohio and others, because you've got a higher proportion of college-educated whites.
You know, here's the thing. We've never seen this. I mean, maybe, going back before you and I were a little more sentient, but usually what happens is you get the bumps after the convention. Things start to die down. By now, you start to see the bumps sort of melt away a little bit, and things start to calm down, and the trajectory is such that things slow down a little bit, and things don't start ticking up again until late September. The idea that you would see a bump that is actually less than where we'll be in a week and a half from that bump of the convention, we've just not seen that before, right? And of course, we've also never seen what Trump has been doing and et cetera, et cetera. So,
right. Well, that's why you wait, because you always say, well, this might just be the convention bump. We're now more than 2 weeks out from the convention. And it even, because there were some polls, I never believed the 15-point poll or 13. That seemed crazy. I believe that, that anything between about 9 and 12 points. And then it has, in national polls, after Trump had at least a couple days in between one crazy episode and another, it seemed like, it started to recede slightly, so that a lot of that was permanent damage, but maybe a little bit of it was just still the convention bounce. So it went down to some polls saying 7 points, 6 points, I saw a number of those. But then, of course, he started this week off, and this week has basically spent the entire week either saying that the opposite candidate should be assassinated, or saying that that the opposite candidate and the current president founded ISIS, and he's moved the last couple of days into something that I'm sure makes Republican voters and donors really happy, which is, I don't care if I win or lose. I get to go on a nice vacation afterwards either way.
Right. I mean, that is he had an interview basically where he said, like, look, I can go back to my great life. And frankly, so let's talk about this to a certain extent, because, I mean, ultimately, this is all well and good, but I want to make sure that we have time to get to, sort of the stuff that is going to, at least in some way, potentially implicate policy, or if not, create some type of alignment. I mean, realignment. Because yep. Now I think we're at the stage, right, where there's... I have a theory that I think Trump has basically said, okay, I'm moving on. I'm back to plan A, which is, I'm using this campaign as a way of increasing my profile, and I'm getting ready. This is all about exit strategy for me now.
Yeah.
And
what's funny though, is there anybody in the world who doesn't know who he is at this point? Right. I mean, it's sort of like, well, you're right. It's not just about, I mean, that's a logical thing for him, because he, pick aside any moral considerations, what he owes people or anything else, people who put their savings into him, although maybe we should question their sanity, but logically you say, well, I want to increase my brand. I want to do this and that. I'm doing this for me. But the interesting thing at this point is he turned himself into somebody that a lot of elite people, who used to be comfortable around him will no longer be.
Yeah, but
himself a pariah of sorts.
I don't think that I think actually that's I think his internal logic actually makes some sense here. If you look at the agenda, I mean, I happen to be one of those people who subscribe to the idea that he is going to launch some type of media-style empire. And, you know, you don't need 40% of the American public to know who you are. If you have 20% of the American electorate that thinks that you are the single truth teller, and you have created over the course of a campaign over the next several months a narrative that their hopes and dreams have been undercut by the likes of Fox, by the likes of the Republican establishment, by crooked Hillary and, you know, the secret Muslim. I mean, even if you have 10% of those people, I mean, even
and
if he gets
Roger
down
Arnold
to 10
seems to have nothing to do with the at this
well,
point,
I so. Think he probably has a non-compete clause. But if he could even shed, I mean, we see him at these polls, right? He's in the mid to high 30s in these polls. Even if he was to shed 2/3 of those people and just get down to like where he's polling at 10%, if they are like if they
look,
are
O'Reilly's show is huge when it hits 3 million people.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a huge for him. And so I'm not convinced that's not where we're at this stage. But put that aside for a moment.
No, I agree with you. And so in that way, the thing about Trump is, and again, you know, his damaged psyche, it's always to him, he's never been accepted by the insider crowd as much as he wants to be, right? He's always been this guy at Queens peering over into Manhattan. You know, that's sort of his mentality. And the thing is now, the irony of all this is, you're right, he's got a lot more sort of mass fans, like a mass appeal among regular people, but the very elite who wants to accept him, he's now pushed further away. So you're not going to see him become any less unhinged after he loses this thing.
Oh, no, and I think it's going
to
be
angry and crazy. I mean, you know, you see pictures of him where he used to be able to play golf. Hell, right? Wedding, showing up at the Clintons, showing up at his wedding, or going to play golf with Bloomberg. Or I mean, besides like Giuliani and Christie, if Christie's not in prison by then, and like a few other people in the New York area, I mean, think about how unpopular he is among the entire elite that he, you know, in his mind, wants so badly to be a part of in the New York area.
Yeah, I guess. But I think, you know, money will win out. And if his media empire gets big enough, you know, I'm sure in his mind it's like they'll come back to him, and they very well may. But wait a sec, I want to go further than this. Okay, so put that aside. Okay. Maybe that's not the case. Maybe he's still earnestly trying to do it. I mean, we got clips that we'll play later about where he's explaining to Hugh Hewitt, essentially saying like, oh, the reason why I'm saying that Obama founded it is because he gets me more media attention. But he doesn't seem to understand that, like, he's not running for the Republican primary anymore. He's running with normal people, and normal people don't appreciate that, even if they hear about it. But so put that aside. What's really relevant now, it seems to me, is whether or not he's actually engaging in this sort of exit strategy. If I am, there was a thing that came out, like 70 Republican or 50 Republican operatives or former Republicans wrote
70 to, they called on the party to stop funding it.
Yeah, and they're having this emergency meeting at the Waldorf Astoria in Miami or somewhere like that today. I don't think Trump's going to be there, but Trump campaign representatives are. They're meeting with the RNC. I think they're just going to all get together and just go like, he won't listen to us. You won't listen to us.
There's going
to
be a lot of that.
I think it's just going to be, let's party. We're all here. We're all getting, expensing this.
Throw some good bashes.
I think,
who's got the coke?
I think, like, look, I mean, at one point, right, if this guy is sinking at this rate, the Republican Party has to jettison him, and it's just only going to, it becomes, I mean, I think the prophecy is already going to be fulfilled, but it becomes even more of a self-fulfilling prophecy where people are just like, I'm not going to go down with this ship. And
yeah, but the interesting thing is that you know, I thought Josh Marshall had a really good take on this. That, you know, and I know that you, I saw you retweet something, you know, that Corey Robin had sent out.
Yes.
You know, and it was whether you should tie, you know, that the sort of annoyance at Hillary Clinton's strategy of not tying other Republicans to him.
Yep.
And I think there's a good point to be made there, but Josh was making a point that I think is true, which is you really can actually get away with both. You can get away on the national level with saying, you know, saying this guy is, he's individually uniquely crazy, uniquely, you know, incompetent, should not be able to serve, and winning over some of these Republican endorsees. But on the state level, they can still attack him, as you see a great Ann Kirkpatrick ad doing with John McCain and others, and tying these guys to them. And it's working right now. Like, you know, numerous polls now show that Maggie Hassan is at least 4 or 5 points up in New Hampshire, because the bottom has fallen out from under Trump in New Hampshire. It's now because New Hampshire, it's a classic one of these things where New Hampshire, very white state, but has a really high education level. And so it's filled more than a state like let's say, Iowa, where Hillary, maybe one of the few states where Hillary could actually potentially do worse than Obama, because that's one of the few places where Trump's win over white working class voters strategy maybe helps a little bit. But in a place like New Hampshire, it seems like he's just offended everybody. I didn't believe it at first when I saw it was 13 points or something. We've now had 4 polls showing it at 10 points or more. So at some point, I have to start believing that he is. How is Kelly Ayotte going to make that up? If he loses by 12 points there, and a whole bunch of people just don't even show up because they're so out of it, there's no way. I mean, you know, Ron Johnson, I think Feingold was always going to beat Johnson. But Mark Kirk is a classic example. He's going to be done in Illinois. And you see it happening with Toomey in Pennsylvania, and McGuinty, frankly, is not a very good candidate, who I'm very much not impressed by. I think anybody you could fit in there, and the fact that Pennsylvania has a 5-point further Democratic lean or so, maybe at least 3-point further Democratic lean than Ohio, means that McGuinty and Strickland, who both, frankly, have not been very impressive candidates, I'm not sure Strickland's going to pull it off here, whereas I think McGuinty can pull it off on the strength of what's going to happen at the top of the ticket.
Wow, the Strickland's been that bad, huh?
He just made a remark the other day, like, it was great timing when Antonin Scalia died because it helped Labor.
Yeah, I mean, I've said that 100 times, I think, probably.
Yeah, but you're not running. I've said it, too. We're not running for office and trying to win over swing voters. We're talking to to people who think like us.
I'm talking to the swing voters, too. I just don't need them to vote for me.
That's right. Yes. Exactly. Any swing voter that wants to listen to us, I'm happy to have them do that and send us all their money.
Couldn't he sort of rejigger that and say, great timing insofar as that Antonin Scalia, even in death, did something wonderful for the country?
That's what he should have said. He just, it's one of the reasons I was such a P.G. Sittenfeld supporter. I get why the DSCC got behind him. They figured universal name recognition here. He's a likable enough guy. But he's, you know, he's older, and I don't mean that as an insult, but he doesn't have the strength. And his campaigns, he's very sort of on his feet, says things and sort of contradicts himself. I'm not saying it's a done deal.
He's
not a good candidate the way McGuinty is not a good candidate. But the difference between the lean at the top of Pennsylvania and Ohio may be the difference.
I mean, frankly, that's what we're seeing with the presidential race, right? I mean, Hillary Clinton, say what you will about whether or not she will be a good president or disagree or agree with her policy set. But I think you're hard pressed to find people who say, like, she's a great candidate. I mean, she's just
that's exactly right. I mean, she's made some awful mistakes, obviously. Obviously, some of the bigger ones even before she ran, which she should have made knowing she was going to run.
Well, what's fascinating.
You're exactly right about that.
So let's talk about this. So there's actually there's like 2 or 3 paradoxes here. One paradox that you're talking about, I have a feeling in the coming days I'm going to want to talk about this more and won't necessarily get to it. But I mentioned it the other day. There was a DNC email which was complaining about Clinton's strategy of trying to make. And I've said this for, in fact, the thing that I wanted that I wanted Trump to do was to hurt the Republican Party. And I do feel like there is a missed opportunity where we make Trump so particularly bad. Like he's not Republican. He's something else. Like that whole construct, I think, is a huge missed opportunity. Your argument, or at least the one that you're telling from Josh Marshall, is that, well, on a national level, that may be the case, but on a local level, in terms of the races and winning back the House and the Senate, they're still doing that, sort of more under the radar.
It's starting to happen in a lot of ads. You're seeing it. You're seeing it in statements that are being made. Because, you know, one of those guys, you know, believe him or don't believe him, I never know whether to, with Cook or Rothenberg or any of them.
Right.
But one of them just moved about five more House races, that all of them Republican races, that, you know, into the either toss-up or
I think we can't even predict, because the real question, it seems to me, at least on that level, and I want to get back to the original point in a second, but on that level, the real question to me is going to be turnout. Like, there's two things that could happen here, right? Where people come out and they're like, I'm not going to vote for Trump. I'll vote for Johnson. I won't vote there, but I'm going to definitely have to vote Republican down ticket to stop, you know, to balance out Hillary Clinton. Or they see these polls and they're just like, I don't need to come out and vote against Trump as a Republican to make sure he doesn't win. I'm just not going to go. I'm not going to show up. And I think that if there was a way to actually measure that, because people are still using likely voter models that are based on past performance, and we don't really know. We've never seen anything like this. So we don't really know.
It's different because the Republican group that is most likely to vote are college-educated voters. And that's the Republican college-educated whites of all the Republican constituencies. And that's the one that is most turning away from them now
It's going to be fascinating. But the other point is there's another paradox, too. I mean, I think we're missing out on this opportunity for Clinton to make a broad ideological argument, tie Trump in as Republican Party. He is indicative of the Republican Party. Instead of making that argument, she's saying he's, you know, sui generis, as they say. But simultaneously, not just what's happening in the States, she gives a speech yesterday, which is, you know, if you had told me that she is going to hit these points in August of the general election, I wouldn't, you know, 2 years ago, let's say, okay, before I knew that Bernie Sanders existed, you know, as a candidate, before I knew that Donald Trump was going to be a candidate, if you were to tell me that Hillary Clinton would go out there, be forceful and specific. I mean, let's listen to just forceful and specific on debt-free college free college for people who are of, you know, $125,000, households $125,000 and lower, you know, coming out for raising the minimum wage, all the parental leave and whatnot, but coming out forcefully against the TPP. And I didn't know anything else. I would have been like, Cliff, you know what? You got to check yourself into a hospital right now because you're insane. That's crazy. And listen to what she said about the TPP yesterday. This is her speech in Detroit. It was a long litany of, you know, pretty people can say, like, I don't believe she's going to do any of this. All right, well, good enough. But I'm saying, in terms of rhetorical, this is a long list of very progressive policies she's laying out there. So we have a non-ideological campaign where she is she's not holding the Republicans responsible for Donald Trump, but on a day-to-day level, there's no grand ideological scheme here, but the policy set are pretty progressive. It's fascinating. It's fascinating to me. Here she is
we'll
on the TPP.
I'll have a comment after that.
All right, here's the TPP segment right now.
The answer is to finally make trade work for us, not against us. So my message to every worker in Michigan and across America is this. I will stop any trade deal that kills jobs or holds down wages, including the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I oppose it now, I'll oppose it after the election, and I'll oppose it as president.
And so, I mean, the after the election refers to the lame duck. And then in response, today, the Obama administration basically, as part of the Fast Track Authority, put Congress on notice that it's going to be sending lawmakers a bill to implement the TPP. That is a it's a submission of the draft of Statement of Administration Action, which establishes the 30-day minimum. So that's part of the Fast Track. We give you notice. It's a 30-day minimum that we give you notice that we're going to try and put this through. They're going to aim, obviously, for the lame duck session. It's going to be interesting to see if Clinton responds to this. It's going to be interesting to see what happens now.
I don't think she's going to get in a big fight with the president of her own party who's supporting her. That's the thing. I mean, we'll have to see what she does. But she can stand up and say in generic terms that she'll oppose it without, like, showing up to man the barricades. You know what I mean?
Right. And the question
but
is...
that may affect certain congressional, obviously, yes. That gives cover to certain members of Congress to oppose it.
There are 28 House Democrats who supported Fast Track. And for the House to pass this, Ryan is going to need those 28. And when Clinton comes out and says she's against it, right, it sort of like unshackles them to vote against the president. Now
that's the key thing there. So that's the key thing, first of all. But second of all, and you know, this is, again, an argument I've been making for a while, and I think this is based on history, at least my understanding of it, which is, there have been a lot of Democratic presidents, and we don't always know what their true feelings are. You know what I mean? I mean, if you know, sometimes they evolve in different directions. You could say they devolve. It really depends what you think. But it's always the culture out there surrounding them, where the strength is on various issues and movements overall in the party, that determines really what happened. They can read polls. You know what I mean? And that's why I've always kind of, my point about Hillary Clinton has always been, there are a lot of people who said she was the person, you know, people I know that worked in the Clinton administration, progressives, who said she was to the left on most of the issues. There are other people who certainly in the years since have said she's moved a lot to the right. The thing is that if she's up there saying these things now, she's realizing, A, she needs to do this to keep her coalition together, but
right.
B, most of these things are very popular even beyond the Democratic Party. She gets it in a way that Obama didn't and maybe shouldn't have as much, because, look, there wasn't a movement against other trade in the past the way there is against TPP. There wasn't a movement, you know, demanding overtime and a minimum wage increase. There was, but not with the strength it has now. We're increasing Social Security or any number of issues. We've seen what's happened. The DLC is dead. Right, they've all gone over, and I guess they've changed their resumes to Third Way. But they used to have multiple of these sort of centrist-y organizations, and most of them are gone.
Yep.
And most of their senators are gone too. Man. Right? I mean, look who popped up his goofy head the other day, Joe Lieberman, to say, "Hey, I may endorse Trump," and then he endorsed Hillary because I guess Trump, you know.
Well, no, you know, Michael had a very good theory on that. That was, Lieberman knew the only way he could get attention was to pretend that he was going to endorse. That's actually a fascinating, like a great PR lesson. Come out with the send up the flare. Like, I may do something that's really crazy so that I get coverage. And then when you come back to me for a next comment, I was just being sarcastic.
Right. The Trump lesson. You know, which he's always in the problem with him is that he says something really crazy, gets the attention, and then he still keeps doing things that are really crazy. The PR lesson is exactly what you said it is with Lieberman, which is, and I figured it was something like that. I'm just making the point that he popped up his head, you know, he said some stuff, and then in the end, even with Hillary Clinton and all the progressive rhetoric and the fact that that she is supporting the Iran deal, in which he, of course, very much opposes because he's him, among other things, he still endorsed her. So all these centrists are, you know, in the party or who are either in office, not in office, are still getting behind her. And, you know, their coalition, Blue Dogs, you know, and others it's a much weaker coalition than it used to be. So if people keep up and keep their voices out there, and groups keep working, I have no doubt that you can make this, you know, it can be a very progressive presidency. Obviously, we still need to get her elected. But that's what I think a lot of this is saying. And yeah, I wouldn't have said to you, Sam, that I thought she was going to do this, because I would have thought I was crazy, too, a couple of years ago.
Yep.
But, you know, a lot of people worked very hard and moved things in a positive direction, changed culture, and I think that that can really influence this, you know, both Congress and the president. So, and that was kind of a lot of my argument, you know, when there were some people that were pissed at Hillary and were saying, oh, you know, it's a lesser of two evils, or I can't stand her, and there are people angry after the primary, you know, and I was like, well, you know, once you get past the emotional part of it, which I understand people need a little time, remember that you can influence and change stuff that Hillary Clinton does. She actually kind of has to listen to you to a certain degree because she wants to get reelected. Donald Trump doesn't.
Right.
In fact, by opposing you, he gets more popular. So by pointing you out and calling you out in front of people and turning his minions on you, he gets more popular. So, you know, there's that.
That's exactly. It's a great point. And all right, we'll talk more about this in the coming weeks.
But can I say just a final thing on what you brought up before? I really do think it is very, and I understand what Corey was saying, but I really do think it's very, very effective still to on the national level, just to make sure that she gets elected, do this now, while on the local level, tying Trump and to around all of their necks, especially all those who've endorsed him or refused to endorse her. Doesn't really matter. You can really go after them. The key to me is more what she does after the election.
Yeah, I agree.
Because after the election, she needs to stand up and say, you know what, Republican Congress, you've got, you know, if it is indeed still a Republican House, you have an 8% approval rating, you've done nothing, my policies are overwhelmingly popular, and to do what Obama didn't do, which is if she has to barnstorm the damn country, whatever she needs to do, especially when she's won, hopefully, in places like Arizona and Georgia and North Carolina and all these, is to go to these people's home states, get in their faces and say,
yeah,
you know what? I've got these two or three economic priorities. You're going to pass them.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, here is, you know, and this is, I'm going to continue, we'll continue this conversation. I am still a little skeptical that one can expect her to do that if she's not doing, setting the groundwork for that now. And so, you know, on a national level, on a broad ideological level, but, there's definitely an argument there, and we'll have it, but we'll do it another
time. And we'll
see.
I think it's whether she can pivot from, here's all the policies I believe in, and these are the ones that work. You should be for them. If she can pivot from that to saying, well, you Republicans, even though you're not Donald Trump, maybe, well, guess what? You're acting like him. You're not for them. This is what's good for the country, and I will fight you on it. And that's what she has to be able to do.
Right. I mean,
we'll see.
You know, it's amazing because, you know, you don't roll out the new products right until September. So none of this was supposed to happen right now. And we will see what happens when we get into those debates, if those debates happen. And
it's going to be fascinating.
It's going to be crazy.
If he debates.
I think he will. I mean, I think because particularly if he thinks he's going to lose, because what? Why wouldn't he want the attention?
Well, it's a big free audience, yeah,
right.
Attention.
We'll see.
And as he believes, even if he gets his ass kicked in them, first of all, he'll never believe he got his ass kicked, and anything is good attention.
I think there's a good chance I'm going to be credentialed for the one in Vegas, and I would say that there is a, I think there's only a 15% chance of that happening. I think he does one or two, and then he's like, it was unfair, I'm not going to do it again. Because he has to.
Right. That may be what it is. If he thinks he can get more attention out of not doing the last one than doing it,
yep.
Then there's that.
Cliffy, always a pleasure. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure, too. Thanks, man.
Bye. Bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Always a pleasure to talk to Cliff Schechter about this stuff. He's very smart about it. And there is, you know, I think on Monday, Digby's going to be... Digby's going to be on, and we're going to talk more about this sort of concept of, you know, is there a big missed opportunity here? Now, you know, I guess it's not as, you know, the one thing about Obama that I genuinely appreciate is he has now made me jaded enough to not anticipate, you know, not to expect someone, you know, a Democratic nominee to actually move this needle. But in some ways, like, you know, he was not in the general election either in 2008 or 2012 proposing the laundry list of progressive issues that she is. So it's very strange. I mean, it's great in that respect. Whether or not, I guess, she'll carry through on them is, you know, one thing. But, you know, we're talking, we don't know that anybody's going to do anything they say. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Matthew Film Guy will be in the house, as they say. Mm-hmm.
Jesus is beside himself. Jacob's in a state of decimation. The writing on the wall isn't writing at all. Just forces of nature in love with our weather station. Hand in hand through the great away at dawn. The writing on the wall said Jesus saves. The writing on the wall mentions honey playing a game with the waves. You can follow.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, on every casual Friday, I like to bring on someone who is either in the entertainment business or has been in the entertainment business or is currently an entertainer or understands the medium of television and film in a way that others don't, to come on and give us ostensibly to give us a movie recommendation that I will ostensibly watch over the weekend, which I find I have less opportunity to do since the birth and growth of my son, Saul. There was a short window where I could do that, but I do my best. And and consistent with that program, what we like to do, if they're a regular, is to have a song to play before they come on.
Yes,
yes, yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Matthew Film Guy, the juxtaposition between this sort of charging heavy metal music, which seems almost slightly out of control, and the person it introduces, who is completely in control, very measured, and very much thoughtful in regard to his movie suggestions. It's Matthew Film Guy.
Hey, what's up, cucks? and I guess cucker, maybe? I don't know.
Cuckette?
Cuckold.
Yeah.
What's up, guys?
Last night I realized Matt had told me early in the day that tomorrow is our 1400 show, and so I tweeted it out last night, and I tweeted it out late because Saul didn't go to sleep until like 11:30 for whatever reason, and I got like half of the responses I got had the word cuck in it.
Keep cucking,
oh,
cucks.
Man.
Yeah,
well,
it was all.
That was the best.
I think it's pretty clear that cuck is the word of 2016, and the sooner you guys get it out there, I think the better. So just keep up the good cuck.
I think so. I mean, you know, for a long time, my trolls would refer to me as a well, as a dirty Jew or as a whatnot, but still metrosexual. True. That's all still true. But I'm no longer a metrosexual. I am a cuck. And
So it's not your personal.
Why is that ridiculous? Kelly's saying it's ridiculous. I can be metrosexual.
When do they call you that?
I have told you this before that. You cannot be a metrosexual and own only two pairs of pants that are cargo pants.
People don't see. No, first of all, they're not cargo pants. I don't own cargo pants.
Okay.
You own cargo shorts.
They're Carhartts.
No,
they're owns, Carhartt pants.
Matthew, he owns two long pairs and two
I'm familiar.
Shorts
I'm,
pairs.
You know, sad to say, I am familiar with the limited nature of Sam's wardrobe from having worked with
but
him.
But the thing is, people who watch me on YouTube, they don't know that. They see my wide array of shirts and blouses and say that I'm a metrosexual, and that's all over.
That basically also just means dirty Jew.
That means dirty
all
Jew.
Right, fair
but
enough.
Cuck.
Yeah, I think they confuse your personal grooming habits with your ethnicity, and I think it's great that now you're no longer defined by your personal grooming habits, the fact that you maybe wear a certain kind of glasses that make you look, you know, a certain kind of way. But instead, you're defined by the fact that your wife has sex with other women while you watch. Other men, excuse me, while you watch.
Right, exactly.
I'm sorry, I was confusing what I think about.
Can you keep it down? I'm trying to read a Social Security report.
Exactly.
Wait, can I just say that?
This reminds me of the dynamic that's happening with Medicare.
Yeah.
What?
Sorry, go ahead, Kelly.
Cost savings are up over inflation.
I don't think this is not directed toward an offhand comment made by you just now, Matthew Filmkin. But I don't. No, I mean, because it just was an offhand comment. But it, I don't think cucker is. I don't like. I don't want to be in this whole cuck.
Oh, she's saying,
situation.
Don't include me in this situation.
I don't want to be
a woman cuckazoid?
Sleeping with someone in front of my husband. Yeah.
Look, what about cuckazoid?
Whatever. I don't want to be one of those.
Let me answer for
things.
Matthew Film Guy. He was being sarcastic.
Yeah, I was just being sarcastic. I didn't say that Kelly founded cuckolding. I just was being sarcastic.
I just don't even want to pretend like...
Don't worry. You know what? You're bringing so much more attention to it. It would have just floated right by if you hadn't said anything. So, you know, don't worry about it.
Whoa.
No, I'm serious. You're under no danger of being sucked into the sophomoric nature of the cuck world if you just ignore it.
I'll bring Chinese food and my Medicare reports, and I hope everything is set up on your end. Okay.
Well, in recent days, you know,
you really are going to make this a thing.
Pull the plug. Eject. Abort. So, Sam.
No, you know what? Actually, I'm not going to do that.
Go ahead.
Because it has come up. Does it bother me? Is it somehow like...
You don't
offensive?
Like being called a cuck.
No, is the whole non-stop cuck talk offensive?
First of all, it's not non-stop. It has to stop to start again. So it stops for a little bit, and then it starts up again.
True. But it's come
You're
up
such
on,
a cuck.
On multiple shows. Is it offensive to me? Because I don't participate in it. And I've said no. It's not. It's just a joke.
Right.
Okay, but Kelly, you do realize that it's everyone making fun of those who would use it unironically. Mm. All these people calling Sam.
Wait,
a
what?
Yes.
Yes,
oh,
I did.
Oh, man. Did
I
just
Matthew,
pull the lid
I
off the whole thing?
That.
I mean, it's a joke. I mean, Sam takes it as a joke and it implicates his own personal life.
No, I get the layered nature of.
No, what I try and do is I try to appropriate it.
Right.
I'm not taking it as a joke. I'm just I'm accepting it and moving on.
Okay. Well, that's
you
funny
appropriate
too.
Their language.
That's right.
I think any man that would say appropriate is
a
total cuck.
Well, yeah, I'm fine with it.
I was just bringing it up because I've been asked multiple times if it bothered me, and it doesn't.
Well, I didn't ask. I didn't ask.
Well. You're pissing her off. You know that, Matthew, right?
Stop being a cuck.
Is that hard to do? From what I can tell, it's not
Whoa.
Hard to do.
Kelly anyway, has Sam. Left the building. Wait. What is she?
I'm
what
sorry. You? I thought I was Matthew the film guy, not Matthew the cuck-splainer.
I can't hear you. You really did piss off Kelly.
Sorry, Kelly.
He just apologized. Not the first time he'd done it. So. All right. Well, Matthew, good job. What film are you going to recommend? Showa now after all that?
You would be the cuckold on Robin Island, Matthew.
God, talk about ruining the party, Matthew.
I'm sorry, but who asked her to butt in? I'm trying to do my segment here.
Well, all right. Wow. I don't know if this works for you at home, buddy, but it doesn't work here. Wow.
Okay. Sorry, Kelly. You're not a cuck.
She's gone.
What? She actually left?
She literally bought a plane ticket.
And she doesn't know when she'll be back again. What's that song?
I'm leaving on a jet airplane.
On a jet airplane.
Okay. All right. So, Matthew. What?
Sam.
We just got off on a huge tangent. I don't even know what it was, but
about cuck.
Give us the update. Give us the update on. I know we've just lost. I think probably 20% of our membership. give us the update on your eBay sales.
Oh, well, it's funny you should mention that, Sam, because I just got a huge new load of inventory from my mother. Yes, you won't believe this, but she is actually letting go of her license plate collection.
I believe it. I wasn't even aware she had one. So she has a license plate collection? How big is it?
It's extremely large.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that that would be a number, right? It would be a number. How many licenses?
Actually, you know what? Those are yet to go up. She has about 45 license plates stretching back to 1939. And,
oh, wow.
And they're going on eBay. I have BMX magazines. I have, what else do I have? Oh, I have keys. Do you need some keys? Some old keys?
No.
Who buys this stuff? I mean, honestly.
Well, I could see people buying all of that except for the BMX magazines. But, Matthew, let me ask
you. The BMX magazines are the number one item on there. They're all classic.
Old keys?
Oh, classic BMX magazine. Okay.
Yes. Going
I didn't realize they
80s.
Were the classic version. Well, wait
and
a second.
Anyone who's,
how much
anyone
does a 1939 license plate go for? I would imagine that's going to, like, that.
Yeah. I'm getting an expert to price those before those go up. So anyone who's following my eBay auctions will have to hang out for another week or so. But those are all being priced as we speak.
Now, what do? You go to, like, you try and get on Antique Roadshow to get those analyzed?
No, actually,
or what do you do?
My mother's boyfriend is, like, this is who got her into the collection thing. So he's going to, like, price them all out for me and know how to, you know, because also some of them are made out of porcelain. Some of them are made out of metal. I have to get, it gets very technical, Sam. You don't understand. The license plate world, you don't even.
So now do you have these? Do you go visit your mom and she gives them to you and you bring them back to your house? And then what happens? Mary says, like, what are you doing, Matthew? Or,
exactly. Mary says, why the hell did you bring more fucking shit into our house? We just got this office cleaned up. And now does she get
angry
boxes.
About it? She get really angry?
You know, she's not angry. You know, Mary doesn't really get angry about it, but I can tell she's extremely annoyed. And she wonders why I'm doing it. And all I say is, look, we have another mouth to feed now. You know, we have our beautiful boy Dudley, who we are teaching and learning and trying to acclimate
your dog?
To the ways of the world. Yes, Dudley, our dog, Dudley.
Okay.
You've heard about him.
Okay.
And he is, you know, I don't want to make him feel any guilt about this, but he's kind of expensive. You know, he needs to eat every day, and he needs to be cleaned, and he needs toys. And all the crap that we bring in here is all for Dudley. And usually when I put it in those terms, she understands. But
okay.
I still need to get out of here quickly.
All right.
I don't know, Sam, when you do something that makes your wife upset, what does she do?
It's just, I can't tell. It's a constant stream of she's upset. So I can't really tell when it's a
downshift. Okay, fine. I'll get my social security reports ready.
She's like, why are you printing all those documents? Well, I prefer to go through the trustee report with my highlighter. And it's just easier for me to do that.
Yeah, the two
I'm constantly, the printer's constantly moving at our apartment. That's really the only thing. It's just the documents. And then, of course, I can't throw them out because they've all been highlighted and marked up. So, all right. So that's what's happening for you on eBay. That's got to be big. Yeah.
That we've made that a regular feature of my appearances now. It really helps that my mother every summer comes and uploads a new inventory. I think eventually her garage is going to be empty, and I'm going to be out of stuff to move. But thank you for bringing that up. I'm sure everyone loves that part of the segment.
Oh yeah, no, that's really good. And so, what else interesting is going on in your life? I imagine nothing, because that's probably crowding it out, the license plates.
I mean, it takes a lot. I mean, between Dudley, you know, we're taking Dudley to these puppy classes where he gets socialized and he learns to meet other dogs and not bite their faces off. You know, I'm trying to keep my garden in the backyard alive in all this frickin' heat, which is not that easy in these
very
boxes.
Difficult.
Yeah. You know, I took Dudley to the vet the other day, and Mary went in with Dudley, and I was parking the car, and I was wearing my Bernie Sanders T-shirt, and I wanted to tell you this story real quick. Somebody in a white pickup truck pulls up and sees me, like, putting the little ticket in the dashboard, you know, you have to do in New York when you park the car, and he says, hey, man, you're not going to vote for Hillary now, right, because of all that email, and she rigged it, right? I'm like, I don't know, maybe I'll vote for Jill Stein. He's like, yeah, but okay, but you're going to stay home, right, because you're mad, you're going to protest, right? I'm like, no, I'm probably going to vote for Jill Stein. You're going to vote for Trump, man, and he pulls away. It was like he threw an egg at my house and ran, you know, it was so insane.
That is, but wow.
That's in my neighborhood in, like, you know, the Brooklyn of Queens, Astoria, New York, you know, so there's an element out there still.
There still is. Well, the dead enders. I'm not surprised. I would think actually from Queens to Long Island, I bet is still going to be one of the most sort of popular places in, this half of the country for Donald Trump.
He was being sarcastic. Like
what about sarcasm? You don't understand.
He's being sarcastic. Yeah, you're going to vote for that bitch Hillary. It's like all the misogynists with a New York accent are going to vote for him.
All right.
Anyway.
So Matthew, what have you got for us this week?
I just got one other question for you. Have you ever been to Block Island?
I have never been to Block Island. I've heard some very nice things about it.
All right. This week is my, coming up is my birthday, and we're going to Block Island. I thought you'd give me some pointers.
Oh, you mean
your old territory.
By we, you mean me? Am I going?
No. Mary and I, and Dudley.
Just
family.
Be careful for ticks.
Ticks, right.
That's the only thing.
He's got that Bravecto. He just took his first, he's got all his shots.
Well, I'm
now
worried about you, too. I mean, make sure
me.
You guys check.
Oh, like
it
Lyme disease?
Yeah, exactly. Nikki had Lyme disease for quite some time, so that was.
Really? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's a bummer. I know that can be really debilitating.
Yep.
I'll probably stay inside then. I'll just stay inside.
Yeah, don't go outside. That would be my advice. If you're going to Block Island, stay inside.
Yeah.
Don't go out of the house.
Yeah, I hear there's beaches.
I would say,
stay away from them.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to the beach. Definitely would not do that.
All right. Good idea.
So that's my Block Island advice. In fact, I wouldn't go.
Thank you.
That would
be
my
advice. Booked the hotels.
It's okay.
And, you know, so it's
okay.
It's kind of,
so have them send you some postcards.
There you go. I'll just let Mary and Dudley go and have a good time without me.
So what do you have to recommend that we watch?
I have a movie.
Hmm.
It's a really good movie. And as you know, I've been showing these kinds of art films to my senior citizens film class at the Forest Hills JCC.
Of course.
And this one went over really, really well. But of course, I have to preface that by saying I have a extremely sophisticated senior citizens class. So, you know, you have to judge that by it's on a curve, sort of. But I want to tell you about a Turkish film called Once Upon a Time in Anatolia. Now, I brought up Turkey with the class because it's been in the news, and usually that's like a hook that helps us generate some conversation. But this film it's like one of those really great artistic statements that shows you what life is like in a place without it telling you anything. It just sort of, you're there, and all the drama is subtextual, and you kind of have to understand what it's like to live in, this is like the rural areas of Turkey, this Anatolia, and you kind of have to understand what it's like, the political scene, what the sort of social mores are, to understand the drama. But essentially, this is like a police procedural told in a kind of abstract ambient style. So it's like a 2.5-hour movie about a group of men accompanying two prisoners. It's like the police chief and the coroner and the prosecutor to have him show them where he buried a murder victim. And it basically devolves into this kind of like fiasco where they can't find it and they have to spend a night in a
village. So yeah. I need to know the social mores of Turkey to enjoy this movie?
I mean, I didn't necessarily know them, but you kind of have to use context clues, you know, to sort of figure out like why they call up the mayor of this small town and he invites them in and they're sitting in his little kind of like rundown shack of a house and he's being very vigorously generous to them, giving them food and drink. And then his daughter comes in. There's like no women in this movie, basically. And the daughter comes in, and it is this most like, it is almost like a religious moment when these men, including the condemned men, see this woman, and without a word being said, it like completely changes the sort of direction of the plot. And again, it's not many words are spoken, and so it's kind of like if this was in America and they all just saw this woman, you'd be like whatever. But the fact that the women are so kind of I don't know, their place is, let's say, specialized, to be nice, that it kind of impacts what you understand about the place. And look, I've never been to Turkey. Maybe, I don't know if you have, Sam. Michael, I know you studied there, right?
Yes.
So this was like a trip to Turkey, and not just to like the cities, but to this sort of podunk area that, you know, you really feel like you are there and you absorb what it's like to be there. And this is a filmmaker whose other films I've seen I've really enjoyed, and he won the Cannes Film Festival with this film, and I think his next film after this one, his last name is Ceylan. I can never get his full name right. It's like Nuri Bilge Ceylan, but he's a real master of the international cinema these days, and just with beautiful imagery, extremely gorgeous cinematography, and a kind of bare, thin thread of a narrative, yet it's this kind of genre police procedural. He carries you through this 2.5-hour, like, really, you know, semi-spiritual experience that I was extremely moved by. And all the senior citizens, to a person, were extremely entertained and enraptured by. Hmm. So I say definitely put this on your list for once Saul is, I don't know, bar mitzvahed maybe.
Right.
And you have about 2 hours.
Well, maybe I'll have a chance to go and maybe I'll take an annex class on Turkish culture so I can understand this movie.
Yeah, you know what? This movie itself, it makes me feel like that I got a kind of a crash cultural course in what it's like to be there. Because it's also about the social strata. There's one of their drivers is an Arab man, and he's kind of teased by the police chief, who's sort of a working-class guy who's extremely hot-headed. And he's sort of in thrall to the prosecutor, who's an educated, older, wealthier man. And it's similar in some ways to Renoir's Rules of the Game, where you kind of see the upstairs and the downstairs, but it's all within this group and the kind of mini dramas. There's so many mini dramas that it's one of those films where there's no main character. And that's one of my favorite things about these kinds of films is your consciousness is never funneled through one perspective. You're given a lot of multiple threads to kind of bring to bear on what's happening. And
Okay.
I can't say anything more good about it.
Yeah. All right. Is it on Netflix or is it on, where do you stream this at?
You know what? I will have to confirm where it is for you. One second here. But I do think it is widely available.
Okay.
Total cock.
You might be right. I just tried to look for it and I think it might just only be on iTunes.
All right.
Okay.
That's okay.
It is then.
I'll spring for something like that. I mean, sounds like a good family movie night on Saturday night. For the kids.
I mean, yeah, if one of them or two of them are sleeping.
That never, ever happens.
Yeah.
But Matthew Film Guy, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Sam, you beautiful cuck.
We will we will post that film on our blog, of course, at majority.fm, as we always do, right, Michael?
We post it in the posts of the show.
Right, in the posts of the show.
Yes.
Matthew,
and obviously we don't always
have
do
fun at Block Island.
It's hit or miss.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much, Sam. Cuck to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, we have a Jimmy Reefcake song. All right, let's have the Jimmy Reefcake song, then we'll go into the fun half.
This is Human Rights Crisis.
Human Rights Crisis.
Weed.
The leaders of Saudi Arabia are in many ways just as bad as ISIS. Public flogging, chopping heads off, executing children. It's a human rights crisis. The goddamn United Nations must be a fraudulent organization. The Human Rights Commission sure seems like an odd position. Did they appoint Saudi Arabia the head to protect the human right to make other people dead? Sure seems like it to me. Another display of human hypocrisy. The hypocrisy could not be any clearer than in the story of Ali Muhammad Nimr. The young boy was sentenced to die for protesting the government. That's why. So come out to Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza in New York City Friday, August 19th at 1 p.m. We'd like our country to pressure the Saudis to exhibit some human rights. After all, they're the goddamn leader of the United Nations Human Rights Commission. So it would make sense for them to stop with the public flogging, the chopping heads off, and at least, stop with the executing of children.
Well, that is...
First song without a weed reference I've heard from Jimmy Reefercake ever.
I had no idea that was a good cause. Definitely, we'll put let's put that protest on the post.
Someone can, I believe that's Esha. Can she tweet that at me? We'll put it on the post.
All right. All right, folks, I'm going to head into the fun half. I will be back Monday on this program. We'll be talking to Digby. Remember, it is your membership that makes the show possible. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And if you buy your crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. You buy it from Jet.com, granted, soon to be Walmart.com, or I don't know what, but MajorityReportKickback.com, at least we get a cut. All right, folks, see you in the fun half, 646-257-3920.